of them, beginning of the visit with Debbie. Mostly, Rick has already given his little short report. On Thursday after supper, the 8th of March, 73, Channel 2 Ovum, beginning of the visit, the session, the little work session with Debbie. This Thursday after supper, the 8th of March, 73, Rick has already given his little short report. Channel 2 Ovum, beginning of the visit with Debbie, with Rick. This Thursday after supper, the 8th of March, 73, this Thursday night.
I want to hear Debbie talk a little bit. What's she going to talk about? I tell you what, I stopped her the other night on candy. She was doing so well.
I don't
know why I got so impatient about that. Just couldn't listen. I just wasn't listening. I couldn't listen. See, I didn't do what I have had so much practice doing.
Yeah, I know.
To hear Debbie tell us a little something. See, she got interrupted so much the other night.
What I think could open it up is that statement. Of course, she put it a little more strongly when she told me. But that candy doesn't take any crap off anybody. You see? Now, that didn't show up in the Greeks talk.
No.
Being small and slipping through a crowd is one thing, but rising up to the governor's staff in 2 weeks from a typist is something else. And here Doug is getting taken on the phone all the time.
And she's always done that.
She always has. Maneuvers, manipulates. And she always knows, she makes snap decisions about things. She always knows exactly what she's going to do. Now, she may change her mind the next day and give you all the reasons why it's much better to change your mind. She can talk you into one thing one day, talk you out of it the next day. Better than anybody I've ever seen do.
She do that to you?
Oh, yeah, it's mostly about... She convinced me I don't think I actually went through the motions of buying it, but she got into her head that we should all buy humidifiers because we were all going to die in Boston from the steam heat, and so we all should buy humidifiers. So Candy, for about 2 weeks, her project was to talk everybody into buying humidifiers, things that you fill with water and the steam comes out, you know, and you feel like you're drowned by morning. She finally bought one. She researched all over town. She got on the phone and found out where she could buy the cheapest humidifier in Boston. Bought one. And I forget, she kept sort of flaunting it in front of Marcia and me, trying to get us to buy one. And I forget now whether, I think hers broke down or something in about 2 or 3 days. So... we never bought one, and after I guess it did break down or something, because I remember she then talked us out of why we shouldn't buy a humidifier after that. But, you know, you were saying the other day that Candy never made, you were saying this morning, Candy doesn't make contact with people, but she does. I've seen her do it. All the people, when she worked in Boston, she was the advertising... she had a very long title. She was the media and production coordinator for Impact Advertising. Which meant that she took the ads and placed them in magazines and did all the, and saw that the artwork was done and got them printed. Well, Candy got to know all the printers and art people and paper people all over Boston, because she'd deal with them, and she'd call them up and talk to them on the phone. You know, she'd call up people all over the country. She'd call up people in Washington, you know, and say, "Hi, John." I was in the office one day, and she called up. This ad was late. Her ads were always late getting in the magazines, but she'd talk her way into getting them printed. She called this guy one day in Washington. She'd never seen him before. You know, she just talked to him on the phone all the time. "Hi, John. This is Candy," she'd say. "Candy from Impact. You remember me?" "Oh, yes, good." "Well," she'd say, "our artwork is late. It's our printer. He just hasn't gotten it to us yet." And she'd talk like this for 15 minutes and convince this man in Washington that he should hold up production and printing of his magazine until her printer got the artwork to her. And it was probably not her printer's fault. It was probably that their copywriter had not yet written the ad, and so it hadn't gone to their printer to get sent back. So it was always Impact's fault, but she'd throw it off on somebody else, and she'd get the magazine to hold up and print her ad.
Yeah.
But she really made contact with those people. They all knew her. They all knew her, who she was, and they all had a feeling of who Candy was because she manipulated all of them. And her best friend was Greg Sabian. He was one of the printers in Boston, and he was Armenian. And he found out that Candy was Greek, and well, I guess that was close enough that he just thought Candy was wonderful. Thought she was just the greatest thing that had ever happened to Impact Advertising, which indeed she was. She kept the place going. It was the most fly-by-night advertising agency you could ever hope to see. They all lived on credit. All of them. They used to charge their groceries to the company. They'd buy cars and charge them to the company. One of the copywriter's son wrecked a car, and so he replaced it and charged it to the company.
Yeah.
Oh, it was just incredible. You talk about sordid details of business. Impact Advertising has got all. All of them.
So who was behind it?
Well, they had one. They had a president when Candy first started working for them. It was a much larger operation. Gradually, they sort of dropped people. She was with them about 2 years, I guess. And they
2 years?
Well, we were in Boston.
Gee whiz, yeah.
69 to 71, so.
All that time.
Yeah. And she was there a little longer than I was.
Yeah.
So. The president left after a while. And so then the two copywriters that were left, or the two, what do they call them, account executives that were left, hung together and were co-presidents because they couldn't delegate the power to one or the other, as if there was so much power to throw around. And so there were the two account executives, and then Candy and Bridget, this girl that used to live over in Micanopy.
She was right up there then.
Yeah, and see, Candy had a title after she was down underneath the account executive. They'd write the ads, and they'd get the accounts, and then they'd give them to Candy, and she'd get them placed and printed. She never actually wrote the ads. She just produced them. Because it was an electronics advertising firm, and what they advertised, computers.
I thought she was just a typing secretary or...
Uh-uh. No. She, did the ads. And see, she just walked into that job. Just walked in and convinced them that, oh no, she didn't know a thing about advertising, but she'd be happy to learn. And so the girl... She just talked the girl into hiring her, the girl that was leaving this position. Candy said, "Oh, I can learn this job in 2 weeks." So she nearly gave herself an ulcer learning it in 2 weeks, but she did, and she kept it. And then that's how she hired Bridget. Bridget walked in. Candy just happened to like Bridget. She interviewed her and liked her, and they needed an office manager. Well, Bridget had never had any kind of job before. She'd just graduated from some little Catholic girls' school somewhere. Never had any kind of job. Candy said, "Well, can you type? We need somebody to run the office. We need an office manager, a secretary, and a bookkeeper. Can you type?" Bridget said, "No." Candy said, "Oh, that's all right. I'll take your typing test for you." So they hired Bridget on Candy's typing test, which was very good. Bridget couldn't type for the first 6 months she was there. Not only that, she couldn't keep the books enough to write down the checks that she wrote. She wrote all the checks for the company, and she wouldn't write them down. She'd just write the checks. So it's...
And pretty. Candy's got to control all that.
And Candy's controlling it all. Plus, there's the two account executives who are just the most, well, there's Russ, who we always used to call him a 45-year-old plastic hippie because Russ couldn't stand the idea that he was over 40, and so he liked to think he was about 29. He's the one that bought the car for his son, and Russ bought a car for himself that was a purple car, like that car we saw today, a purple convertible. And he used to drive around in this purple convertible and wear these really wild clothes. You know, he'd go down to all the little hippie shops on Charles Street and buy beaded vests and did hand-tooled belts and moccasins and things and sort of creep around and always talking about... He was a supposedly a frustrated poet, and he was in copywriting and advertising instead. And he used to get everybody in his office and get you on the other side of his desk and he'd say, "How are you relating today?" He'd say. It got worse. I knew him for 2 years, and it got worse. You know, this relating business, or his other thing was, "Well, I'm really getting my head together these days. It's really where it's at, my head." That's what he'd say. That's why we called him a plastic hippie, because that's all he talked. The only thing he could say was hippie jargon, which is getting your head together and knowing where it's at. Russ never knew where it was at.
Looked like Candy was the only one that knew what was going on.
Well, she was probably the only one that had any sense in the whole organization.
Well, you weren't in that organization. You just saw that through...
You was Candy.
Now, you didn't live with Candy.
Yes, I did. I lived with her in Boston. Candy and Marcia Gold. That's not Marcia down in South Florida. That's another Marcia. Marcia's the one that works for the brush company. Marcia is another story, because Marcia worked for this paintbrush factory running the switchboard, and she used to get so mad at them. She was awesome. She worked in an office that was... Candy's office might have been full of sort of strange and exotic people who drove purple cars, but Marcia's office was full of... What was his name? They had an office manager who used to walk around and sort of rap their knuckles if they drank coffee at the desk. Marcia couldn't smoke at the switchboard, which would really upset her. And she could she had to be at work, punch in at a certain time, and punch out for her coffee break, and punch back in after her coffee break, and punch out again for lunch, and punch back in again for lunch, and punch out again for the afternoon coffee break, and punch back in again. Yeah, when she was through, punch out again at 5. She nearly went crazy. But she used to have her little moments of vindication. She ran the switchboard. She could never get anybody to pick up the phone at the right time. So she had an intercom to call all over the paintbrush factory to get people to pick up the phone. And so she used to get on the intercom and yell at everybody in the factory. She'd get on the intercom, and so Lenny would get a call, and so she'd call for him on the second floor, and Lenny wouldn't answer. She'd call for him again. Lenny still wouldn't answer. So she'd get on the intercom and she'd say, "All right, Lenny, I'm giving you five seconds to pick up this phone. If you don't pick it up, I'm cutting off your call, and it's just too bad." She'd cut it off. Marcia also couldn't type. When she got this job, Marcia had been a teacher. She got a master's in history at Wisconsin, and then she taught for a year, and really hated it. And so, because she was teaching 7th and 8th grade social studies, and she couldn't stand it, so she quit, and couldn't type. And part of her job was to type. type as well as run the switchboard, so she had to learn to type too, like Bridget. So all that matters, as long as you can type, you can make it.
Where is that, Marcia?
She's still in Boston, as a matter of fact.
She's the only one that's left?
In Boston?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. That's why you stopped in Boston, because Candy was there.
Marcia was there.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason she stopped there.
The reason you went there, you knew somebody there. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean when you first went there? No.
When I first went to Boston.
Well, that's not what Faye means.
No, she meant this fall.
Now, you don't have any of those half-wits around anymore, do you? You how you get along without them?
Pretty easily. We mostly just laugh about them. We looked at them.
Well, you miss them.
My friends, you mean? Or not Russ the plastic hippie?
Yeah.
No, Marcia and all of them. I mean, the ones, your friends.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have anybody like that around now.
Not here in Gainesville, no.
Well,
you have a sad bunch to put up with, don't you?
Got me and Rick.
You do.
This is Evanston, not Gainesville. Evanston doesn't count. We were talking about Gainesville.
Well, now that's right, Debbie. You are used to some pretty witty people around. Look what you.
Look what you got to put up with.
I'm not talking about. Just around. You don't have anything like that. You always sort of reckless too. Don't you?
Well. I don't know.
You had things on foot, things that you were doing.
Yeah, a lot of activity, but not. Wait. Weren't very mental. I don't think.
Well, there's no great premium on that, I'd say. I'd rather not be in it myself now. I'd rather get it second hand. But it'd be you want it first hand. You ought to have more of it, just all the time. She had living such a quiet life now, Faye.
I'm not complaining. Do you see me complaining?
Well, you don't. No. I'm complaining for you.
Well,
I hadn't thought about that, Faye.
Well, one thing about it, I think Debbie looks at it now, but at least one thing about it, she left it on your own accord, didn't you? But you've looked at it.
Well, you don't have to leave it forever, do you?
No. But I probably wouldn't go back to it with the same.
Well, you wouldn't go back to the same thing, probably. But now you saw a lot of things up there, didn't you? And look at all those people.
it really comes out, Debbie, when you talk about it. Is you know, it's something. It was not only fun, but it was right interesting the people you knew.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I run them down. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm just mm-hmm. not interested in you know that sort of people anymore. But I don't mean to run them down. I mean, from your point of view, you just saw all sorts of people, didn't you?
I guess so. Well, I guess so. Yeah.
Well, was that your object? You didn't get wealthy.
I sure didn't. Couldn't get wealthy living in Boston. You can't get wealthy living in a city.
You weren't a moneymaker.
I'm not sure what my object was. I wanted to live in a city.
Yeah.
Well, that's mostly what it was. Well. It was the only, as far as I thought it out.
And you never had been on your own, you said. Mm-hmm. And you wanted a little of that.
Is that right? And you went off as far as you could go.
No, well, it was sort of the big lure of going to. I wanted to go to New York. I was really going to do it up well.
Yeah.
I was going to jump right in. Because I had a friend from college who'd gone to New York, and I went to visit her for a week when I was a senior at Duke. And I just decided New York was just the place where I needed to be. I mean, just this wonderful city.
Yeah.
I needed to be there with the muggers. So I was going to go to New York. And I just ended up in Boston. Instead, I overshot.
Well, I don't know. Did you learn there? Did you have a lot of lessons in putting up with a great deal? Or had you had a lesson already?
Putting up.
Oh, I couldn't have put up with all that crowd and worried me.
Even at
21. Like I don't write it down. I mean, but you still had to put up with a good bit, didn't you?
Well, you put up with things when you, just when you live with people.
But
you know?
You didn't think of it as putting up with something.
Not really. I mean, we used to. We used to get mad at each other, but it was never a matter of putting up. You know, I mean, everybody knew you. Everybody else was putting up with you. So, I mean, I'm put up with things. Everybody else put up with things from me. So,
there was a lot of that, wasn't there? You had to do a lot of that. You see, it doesn't mean anything to her. She just takes that for granted.
Oh, she's adaptable.
Well, that's you don't want to lean on a word.
Yeah. Well, I never look at it as putting up with.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem to me that's what it is.
You put up with those damn dogs this weekend.
Sure.
But you don't think of it as putting up with them?
I just don't. Well. Why allow thinking about that I'm putting up with the dogs to spoil the time I'm going to have there? I'm just too easy going.
You were just looking. That was an interesting statement. I thought that you made that you were looking at how Candy and Doug handled it all. You know, I mean, you're looking at what they.
Well, look, Debbie. We don't discuss anything. You see, you report and we listen to you. And if you don't take the point of view, that I'm interested in, I get put out with him. And that's the long and short of it. But now, you take, you see, the discussion side that we don't do. You know, there's a lot of those stages they've got to go through with, aren't they, Doug and Candy? They got to have dogs and put up with all that stuff and have their friends come over there that don't know what to do with the baby, but change the diapers. They've got to go through a whole lot, haven't they?
Yeah. If you want to see it that way.
Yes, the difference is, that she's 25 or 24 or 26 or whatever it is, and they don't have to put up with things. Rick doesn't put up with things.
I'm worse than that.
Well, now, you see, if I were to see Candy, I'd be willing to forego all the minor pleasures that you have, the dogs and the pranks, and I'd just love to hear her talk, just talk, especially about the office. Now she wouldn't want to do too much of talking. She get tired of it. Now that's what I would like to. That's what I'd like to hear. But she doesn't take that home with her.
Well, I imagine she does. We used to bring our offices home when we were living together in Boston. We used to report on the whole day, all the time, every day. Tell everything that happened. That was very circumstantial. Marcia Gold used to tell me everything that went on in the office at the paintbrush factory. The time she had the fight with the man about her parking space and everything.
What was that?
She drove a car to work, and the paintbrush factory was in Roxbury, which is the worst blast slum in Boston. And it's not very safe to walk around in broad daylight. And they got a parking lot next to the paintbrush factory. And I guess Marcia was one of the she was the only woman in the office that drove a car to work. The rest of them came on public transportation. But she was also just ran the switchboard. So they gave her the last space down at the end of the lot, which was 30 cars down the row. So Marcia went into the president, and she told him she wasn't taking that place, that it was too far away, and she didn't want to have to leave her car and walk that far. And he said, "Well, I'm sorry, but you run the switchboard. You have to take the place that we give you." And she said, "I'm not taking that place." She said, "I'm the one that's going to go out there and get raped some night. I'm not walking down to the end of that parking lot." And she yelled at him for 5 minutes, and he gave her another place. Marcia doesn't take too much off anybody either. As a matter of fact. She told me that whole thing, blah, blah, blah. And Mr. Walsh, that was the office manager. Mr. Walsh was just a demon. She used to come home and tell me just everything about Mr. Walsh and what Mr. Walsh had done that day. I don't remember it now. I don't remember the things she used to tell me about Mr. Walsh. But she'd tell me the whole day. Now, what can be terribly interesting about running a switchboard all day? pretty dull and punching in and out for coffee breaks and lunch. But it was fascinating when Marcia talked about it.
Was it?
Oh, it was fascinating. She just recreated the whole brush factory. It was really fascinating. Most of the time she was just bitching about it. Just being mad because she was so bored and frustrated running a switchboard. I mean, that's pretty awful to do.
But sometimes she could reconstruct the whole...
She reconstructed the day every day. She did it every day.
And make it interesting.
And she made it interesting. Now, I can't reconstruct it now. I don't remember. I can barely remember Mr. Walsh's name. But she had everybody in the office in there. It was just a little office. They handled the bookkeeping and ordering and sending out the paintbrushes. It was a paintbrush factory, and then there was a warehouse where the paintbrush people worked and made the paintbrushes. She could tell you all about the ferrules and the fennels and everything that you make a paintbrush with.
And she operated the switchboard.
She had a master's in history from Wisconsin. Wrote her thesis on, I don't know, the Puritans in Salem or something like that in the 17th century. And she got promoted after a while. They promoted her, and she did the payroll.
Was that part of her historical training, that she could reconstruct the...
No, I just think she talked a lot. She just talked a lot.
I didn't know people talked a lot like that. Didn't know think they had an audience. Who was their audience?
I was.
Just you?
Yeah. Candy usually wasn't there.
But if
she was, she'd talk about what had happened in her day too. I mean, when you spend.
Well, you could mix the days.
Pardon? What do you?
You couldn't mix that days. You couldn't have that 2 days just Candy talking about hers and Marcia talking about her at the same time.
No. If Candy was there, then she'd listen too.
Would she listen?
Mm-hmm. And we do, and the same thing would, I do the same thing in my office. You report on what you did the night before.
But you didn't call it reporting.
No, but it's the same thing.
What'd you call it?
Talking.
Just tell them what happened.
There's nothing abstract about it. It was very factual.
But I wouldn't think it would have any particular direction.
No, it didn't.
No attempt to make any statement or really see what you did. That's the one thing I know you can. You can give out a stack of information, exactly what happened, but never see it.
That's right. That's right.
That's a big difference.
That's the difference.
What about that? No direction?
Mm-hmm. Well, the direction in Marcia's case, I think, was mostly complaining. She was just complaining and saying how awful it was. Star Brush Company.
Yes, I guess.
Well, now, see, in a way, now you look at Debbie with all her possibilities, and look what she was doing up there. If that wasn't slumming, I don't know what was. Look at all the things she could have been doing. Living in an elevating place. And there she was up there listening to Candy and Marcia bitching or complaining. And complaining herself, I guess.
Oh, yes. All the time. You should have heard me on the subject of Tufts University. The dentist. I'd tell them all about my dentist. And then
you mean that particular one?
Blackbro, uh-huh.
Was that your favorite subject?
Well, for about a year it was. But oh, there were all the other people too, all the deans, the crazy dean that ran the medical school. Used to take my magazine copy and keep it for a month, and it was supposed to be a monthly magazine. So there was no way it could come out every month. Because by the time he'd give the copy back, it'd be old news.
express. Have a copy of the copy?
Oh, sure, but I couldn't print it until he said it was all right. It was his magazine. He was paying for it.
Oh, so he didn't care whether he printed it or not.
That's right. He didn't care. He had no sense of urgency about anything.
Oh, really?
Nothing.
Well, I thought those old bastards were urgent.
Oh, not William Maloney. Oh, no. Now, the dental dean was, but William Maloney was not. He was very deliberate. He used to form task forces and things like that to study a problem. And then the task force would carry on for a year or so. And the medical school just kept slipping downhill.
Is he the one that went to Chicago?
No, that was my boss,
yeah.
Mr. Elder.
Yeah.
But you know, it's interesting what Rick said. Lots of talk goes on, but unless there's a statement and direction, that makes all the difference.
Well, it's not nervous talk.
No.
You just. But I'm surprised that you even talked about the office when you got home. I think you'd be taking a swig of beer and thinking about going to the picture show.
Well, I think if you spend 8 hours of a day doing something, you're going to talk about it. You talk about what you've done. That's pretty normal.
Well, I'd say the reverse would be more true.
I wonder, you report pretty much at home, too, don't you, Debbie?
Yes,
your
we do.
Family
we've always
reports to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You tell. You used to go home and talk about Misty, and you talk about what you did out here.
Mm-hmm. We used to all, when we were in school, we always told about what we'd done at school, too, when we were children. We used to have an adventure hour, and we'd tell our adventures when we were little children. That's what we called it. My mother used to call it that when we were children.
When you come home,
uh-huh,
you talk.
About 5 o'clock, we'd all sit down
and
tell our adventures.
Is that right?
You could talk about anything you wanted to. I mean, you didn't have to talk about what you did that day. But it gave, and you didn't have to be there. But it was just if you wanted to talk about something, you could.
And you had an audience.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
At least your mama was there.
And Daddy. They'd sit down. Daddy, yeah, he'd sort of hide behind the paper, but he'd listen. He'd talk.
And that's nice. That's good. And then you have a chance to talk.
Mm-hmm. See, all of this now, it's just, you see, that's what happened out here. Everything that happens out here is against my expectation. Just like I'd think when you got home from work, the last thing you'd want to think of was that darn old office. You couldn't have hired you to have brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, that's all I know about it. Here am I.
So you see, she was being Whitman. Well?
No, she wasn't either. No. I don't know what Ben Whitman is. I used to think I had a feel for Whitman, but I'm puzzled by him now. You see, he has that marvelous statement in the preface. In the preface, in that, was that 1855? Hmm. is the daytime when I can see. Conversation 55. You see, he has that remarkable statement. If the poet, the poet must live, you see. If he does not flood himself with immediate age, as with vast oceanic tides. Now, what he means by flood himself with immediate age, I don't know. I supply the blank from Specimen Days, where he goes with the rides on the jitneys, the taxis, with the drivers, and rides the ferries, and goes to the opera, and he remembers all the plays and the players. That's the early part of Specimen Days. He recalls those things. Now that's what I think of as flooding himself with immediate age. But you see, you didn't go up there to flood yourself with immediate age. You'd read the preface, 1855. Then she looked wicked.
She hadn't read the preface. Oh, shoot.
No, you all go ahead. I wanted now you didn't go on, Rick. I wanted to have this out with. You didn't go up there to flood yourself at immediate age.
You're...
Shut up, Faye.
Hush. You gonna leave that? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know, but I guess I don't know.
Well, you ought to have some direction from some of your reading. That would carry you up there.
No, I don't think there was anything that it was any direction from my reading that sent me there.
Well, you want experience.
Yeah.
But what'd you get? Just rehash the day.
Well, that was experience. I had a job.
Well, why did you want a job?
Because I had to eat.
You could get a job where you could eat.
Well.
You just settled down and now when you went up to Maine, you looked around. When you left Boston.
In New Hampshire. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I got the idea that you looked around.
I did, and I already had sort of a feeling for that area anyway. But from living in Boston, I used to spend a lot of time up there when I lived in Boston.
Well, now when you say you have a feeling for an area.
I knew, that's a pretty vague statement, isn't it?
No, it's just a cliche. It looks like you hadn't cut through a whole lot of things.
I'd seen New England a little bit while I lived in Boston.
Why do you want to see New England? What is there to seeing New England?
It was different. I guess I guess I assumed that an experience had
well,
to
now,
be something different.
Well, you don't want to see Alachua County. You just want to see Miss Mary.
I want to see the people.
The people? You don't see the people. You're using those abstractions.
I saw my godmother. I saw the people that lived in the village. Jane across the street. Jane's mother was an opera singer. And Roland and Elaine, who lived next door and spent half the year in Florence. Well, Roland lived in Florence. He never came back. He went to Florence and stayed. And Elaine used to come back for the summer and go, for the winter. She'd come back for the summer and she'd go back to Florence in the winter to spend half the year with Roland. And he never left the Ponte Vecchio. Stayed right there until he finally came back to New England this year.
What was the object of that?
He liked music.
I mean, what was your object in it? What did you get out of all that?
That there were actually people who did that. I'd read in books about people who did that. It was so.
You just go out for odds and ends. Anything that comes up, by flood yourself with media leads, you'll flood yourself with odds and ends. Tell you now, I have to learn a little bit, and the only way I can do it is just probing a little bit. You see, you don't tell me, you don't know what to say, what happened. That's the end, do you?
That's right. Hey, most of the time, anything I say, you say you're not interested in.
Well, it's just a matter of speaking, you know that. Well.
You see, he already told you that he tries hard not to be civil. But that's
well,
just
that's not
that.
All the other.
No,
oh,
he did.
First thought. Second thought.
You did it a lot better than I ever did. I told you that.
Well, it's hard to talk about your friends, you know, people that...
Well, I'll be damned if I see that. They're the best, only ones I can talk about. My friends, who else am I going to talk about?
Well,
I don't want to talk about my enemies.
Got it.
I know a lot of people I despise. You want me to talk about them?
No, I mean, what I was getting around to was that... It's hard for me to be detached with them.
Well, don't be detached.
Well, I have to be if I'm going to look at them. And I don't want to go and feel that their life is boring or something like that. I mean, that's condescension. I don't want to do that.
Well, I wasn't born to them.
Well.
Well, anyhow, that's you got to. You know, you know what you do. When you probe like that, you got to keep going until you find something fruitful. It doesn't matter what it is, you see. You just get a hold of it where it's fruitful. That's the part of it. I mean, what I'm talking with you. What I would aim to do, you see, is to keep moving until I find something that works. That's interesting to you, and that you'll go along with. I'm not.
I thought for a long time that that little statement of Whitman, that the poet is one who floods himself with his immediate age. And you see, in that, what I saw was all the young people, seemingly, at least I thought what they wanted, you see, was to do that in a general way. That is, they wanted to go places and see things and do that spelunking and do some scuba diving and, you see, just odds and ends of experience. They weren't particular, and I wasn't either. I mean, there for a long time until, you know, I got into this.
But yet it hasn't been very long. So what he was, you know, anything. Let's go.
No, I never. You see, this is the first time I've had any coherence of any sort.
So you see, it's long past your.
That is where experience would meet anything in particular to me. This thing of his, you see, flood himself with immediate age. I see something that's more coherent now. I thought I saw in that something coherent. I don't know what he means by it. I said to you I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And what I do, I just fill in with specimen days. You can do that. And it's a remarkable thing, but if you look at the early part of specimen days, of course, he's thinking of a time when he was older than you are. You did it just out of college, you see. Well, he didn't go to college, for one. That's another thing. And these plays, a lot of them, you see, just the old melodramas. Forrest and those people, and all the Montezuma. I forget the names of them. I've read a lot of them. Reading them won't quite do it. You've got to really project to bring them, say, those things to life, you see. There was so much action in them. And just theatrical action, you know.
And he went to all of them.
Yes. And he went to Shakespeare, and he went to the operas. He went to all those things. But see, that was, he didn't go to school. And I haven't seen, you see, you didn't do anything of that sort. Of course, you went to school, I presume. And you see, he lives in those things. And then when he writes poetry, he uses those rhythms. It's very hard for me to capture, because I don't have those rhythms in me. I don't want a rhythm in me, you see. I avoid rhythms. Just plain words is the best rhythm I can get. So, well, anyhow, it's so different. Circumstances are so different. And then he's older, and then he doesn't have any schooling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the world he lives in. And he must have lived in that world, pretty much. And you see, you didn't do that. You didn't go to see Othello or all these other pieces and then live in it for a week or two or months. So actually, he's more of an artist than you are. Now, I'm picking up the ball now, and I'm running with it just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just sort of, you know, just carrying it along. sometimes I throw off on the academic thing, but sometimes I think I'm at heart more academic than the others are, because I actually like it.
And what's more, as Roy always
and I like
that, and the rest of them is you live it.
Yes. Yes, I don't want to just know it. I want to sort of live it. Now you see, Miss Rawlins suits me. I don't need Milton. He's too big for me. But I can reconstruct that life, you know, that she has, that little thing on the census.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's rich as can be. And I wish I could do that. I'm past it now. But when she started, you see, I see you passed it because you're too learned, I imagine. And she and that girl got out on horseback all over the place. And if you got out on horseback over there, old Virgil would take out after you. So now what's happened in the world? What's happened in the world? You see, nobody ever took out after her. Or the girl, you know, that she went on the census with. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
So you have to be more circumspect than she was. We're getting a long ways fast, aren't we?
You're really running with the ball. You're already at the 20-yard line.
Oh, geez. Well, I'll read Kelly.
But now, let me tell you, I think you can say this. You say experience is something that you get without looking for it. But I think a little direction in it puts life in it. A little bit. And you see, it can be passed on. You see, 16-year-olds are marriageable. Drive a car. And that's some of these days. And at 16, I think you can pass on a good bit about experience.
I don't know.
To where it won't be odds and ends. You don't think so? You think it has to be odds and ends?
No, I just wonder how much someone who's 16 looks at what they do. That's what I wonder.
Yeah.
I don't think it necessarily has to be odds and ends, but I think it's rare that you'd find someone who's 16 who would pass on an experience.
Well, you know what I found? When I was 20, who did it and did it better than the old one? 20. No one had no instruction. As a matter of fact, it's a wonder if she wouldn't take instruction.
But she grew up reporting. But I can see that you're, you know, that little adventure owl.
Mm-hmm.
As a child, you see, this is the whole big problem for most children. They're never given the chance to talk. Not really, except just to jabber.
Mm-hmm.
But you had a little time set aside that this is where you could talk other times too, but it's made a difference. I think it does. And let's go to bed.
Well, you don't forget, look in the back of your car and see if you can find the insides of this box. I got here with one box and nothing in it. You know what? Look at that.
I don't think there ever was one in there, guys.
Look at that.
You know, somebody stole it.
Somebody just took
look
that.
Look at there. That's right.
Well, what do you know? What do you know? Well, look at that.
You just brought it in. Brought
they
it.
Just removed the contents.
Uh-huh. You folded it up.
And put it back in.
Well, ain't that nice?
And so look what
well,
you
ain't
got.
That nice? And I got a half a dozen of them and didn't notice it.
How about that?
Shoplifting.
Yeah.
The world is a sordid place. Oh dear.
Not really.
Well, thanks for the
talk. Well, this is around 1500 on channel 2 over. And the end of this little session between me and Debbie, mostly. And this is after we had a little business session. Rick reported what he found out from the new man at the museum on the grant, application for a grant. And then I had a little session with him on Emerson Whitman. And then, just to liven me up, I talked with Debbie on one or two little things, odds and ends mostly, and what it is, it's mostly she doesn't report, I don't report, and what it is, it's question and answer, and it just shows how useless question and answer method is, and. It the question gets a person in a corner, and it's he has no control. And this is the end of this little visit, study session, or talk after this study session. We're studying Whitman now and the Bardic things, and getting ready for my chapter one. This Thursday night, the 8th of. Of March 73, study session, after supper, the 8th, Thursday, the 8th of March 73.
There's collaborative newsletter, so there must be something coming up in there.
Maybe we'll see that.
Yeah.
Well, now we've got this little notice that Dick Green called Faye's attention to. She was by the office yesterday. And, tomorrow, Gene Morse and them are having a number of people get together who are sort of interested in these things, including the boy I've got in there. I meant to bring it in here. The one we sent $15.
Yes, Sam Gallen.
He's on it, I think. And just get together and see what they can see if they can work out something together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably a good idea. And I told Faye that the beauty of it is, you see, that I don't have to go. Because I'd kill it all if that thing that came up. I'd kill it all, they'd kill me all. But they'd love to hear what you said.
Said Rick.
I imagine they will.
Well, now you see, on this, I haven't gone to that extent. I stay away from the abstractions. It's pretty plain language. Of course, all these small words are also technical.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one thing they don't realize. I remember old Dean Hunter, Dean Hunter said, Maryville College, I used to go to the meetings with him. He said, Jonathan Edwards, all he used was a small word, he said, but he says, just amazing what he meant by it. Jonathan Edwards. And got no theological language to speak of. Very, very little. And you don't need it. You see, you've got technical language here, but it doesn't sound technical. It's all the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's understandable.
I ought to say, I ought to make this clear somewhere along the line that I use the word experience. It has a double use. You see, experience is the meaning that you get out of your experience. That's your experience. This is what all my experience means to me. What my experience means to me is my experience. You see, it's a meaning abstracted out of a whole lot of experience, isn't it? It is. Well, but that's not the way I use it. You see, I use it as experiences that lead into some sort of experience. I'm just putting the two together.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I'm using the experiences, the little narrative happenings. That's the way in which I mean it. But the others there too, but I try to stay away from it. But I think you see the people who make a business of writing, you see, they would have to use it in that abstract sense. Mine is less abstract.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think Debbie ought to give us a little view of the world from the point of view of which we work out here, sort of enable us to make contact. Use our she hadn't used any of our categories when I say mental.
Well, I tried to use the reporting on the dogs. That to me was, well, that was the time when I saw them looking at something visible in their lives and reporting on it.
I didn't see any direction in it. It looks to me like there's a lot of noise. Distraction in the house.
No, they've turned it. It's important enough to them. It's not just a distraction. It's important to them.
The dogs are like people. It's not. They aren't distracted by the dogs. They.
They live around them.
Yeah. I do.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't mean they're rattled, although I think they are. I know you put it. Well, what would you say? I the use of my cows. Just I see them as people. Well, they perplex me. There's no secret to that. They just keep me off balance 3/4 of the time. What in the world are you going to say about that? If they don't keep you off balance because you don't deal with them. Hell, I see them getting bony out there, and all I've got is this darned old fool oats over here. And I get me a stick and make them eat it, and you think it's funny. To me, it's sad. It pulls me all the time. I feel about it. You see, I wake up at night thinking, what in the world are they going to eat? The whole ranch is on my shoulders. It's not funny. And it keeps I 3/4 of the time, I wish somebody else had it. Seriously. I'd love to have a little relief from it. It's all about humans. I'm a two-shot.
I thought she I went along
we
with Debbie.
Take a sign.
Yeah, I went along with Debbie. And the nice thing about it was that she did use there looking at the dogs. And also she gave us another picture.
Look at the dogs.
She gave us another picture of Candy.
I don't think they look at the dogs. They don't have the dogs to look at them.
I don't know why they have the dogs.
Well, I know why I've got the cows.
They got the dogs because they wanted a pet.
Well, that's just saying I eat a biscuit because I was on a biscuit.
The nicest thing she did was that look at Candy. It was not. It was Debbie looking at Candy. And that ride.
That what?
It was that Debbie looking at Candy on that ride.
Well, she hadn't said anything about this thought that's plausible at all. She's talking about Candy out there acting like an adolescent.
Yeah.
Hell, anybody can go around passing off old tickets and trying to get the front seat. You don't have to be Candy to do that. You don't have to be on the governor's staff to do that.
I think.
Yeah, I've set it up for her. She won't take home.
It helps if you're on the. I know.
That's why.
Candy's writing a report on consumer fraud. And we're not. And she's out there frauding them. I really don't think. I think the tickets were legitimate. I really do. But. She said her best story about consumer fraud, she said, you know, it's making Doug aware. She said, it's finally making Doug aware of how he's taken all the time. He'll take things back to the store now. She said, last year sometime, she said, the phone rang. Doug answered it. She says, Doug is such a pushover. He is such a pushover. He'll anything anybody asks him, he'll do it. She said, and
this is the first time I'm able to take hold. The first time. Oh, almighty, look how I've had to wait, see? That damned adolescent ride. And those fool dogs. I've been harassed by dogs. Everybody who comes out here wants dogs. They bring dogs.
Don't get her off the subject, got hush.
They bring dogs out here to give them air. Well, why don't they take them somewhere else to air them? They don't think the dogs ought to be kept up. So bring them out here.
To run your cows.
I don't care whether they run the cows or not. I just don't want them out here. They're distracting. Here I am trying to keep a place where a fella can... knock somebody's head off if he wants to, and they bring dogs. Go ahead, Debbie.
I'm trying to pull this together because it was.
Don't pull it. Just go ahead. Go on.
Candy telling about Doug and consumer fraud. She says the phone rings. Doug answers it. Doug is such a pushover. Anything anybody asks him, he tells them anything. She said, I'm sitting at the kitchen table and Doug's talking on the phone. And I just hear Doug, meanwhile, is sitting on the other end of the table saying, oh, Candy. She said, I'm sitting there and I hear Doug saying, yes, yes. Yes, my name is Douglas Richards. Yes, yes, I'm a graduate student at... Yes, why, I am a graduate student at Florida State University. Why, in music, yes. How did you, yes, yes, of course I am. Well, yes, I live at, and gives his address. And yes, my wife works for the government. Yes, she does. Yes, uh-huh, yes. And my father? Oh, well, my parents are from... Candy, meanwhile, is tearing her hair out, just pulling her hair out, saying, who is this? Who are you talking to? What is this? Who are you talking to? And finally, she said, after about 10 minutes, Doug has told him his entire life story, told him everything about him. He says, well, yes, no, I'm sorry. I already have life insurance. Candy starts screaming at him, hang up, Doug, hang up, quick, hang up. They're just trying to sell you phony life insurance. So Doug says, well, yes, of course I'll think about it. Oh, of course I'll think about it. By this time he's on first name basis with the person on the other.
So he goes along with them best he can.
Oh, he does. Tells them everything, every question they ask him. And so he can't tell him no. He doesn't want any life insurance. He won't do it. So he says, well, I think I better talk this over with my wife, he says. I'll tell you what. You call me back tomorrow, would you please, at noon, and hangs up. And Candy just explodes. What do you mean, talk it over with your wife? We've already got life insurance, she says. What are you talking about? They're taking you. Why didn't you tell him no? Oh, says Doug, I'll tell him no tomorrow. So the whole night long, Doug is worrying about how he's going to tell this man no, he's not going to buy his life insurance. And I think he finally solved the problem by leaving at noon. So he wouldn't have to talk to him. And so now, Candy said, Doug has progressed another step. He will now take things back to the store if they're not any good.
Such as, I don't, let me interrupt you.
Such as, I say, well, I think they were talking mostly about groceries. If they find groceries that the sack is half full or something, they take it back. Because Candy's on the governor's staff of consumer fraud, and so they take it back. And Doug just says, yes, yes, he says, I take it back now.
But he's still half-hearted about it.
She eggs him on.
Yes.
She eggs him on. Oh, he takes it.
I mean, it takes eggs.
Oh, it takes.
And he's still half-hearted.
Well, I think it's probably twice as much effort to take back a soggy head of lettuce as it is to put it in your salad and eat it, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I'd look at it. But Candy take it back.
Well, buying it, yeah.
But Candy would take it back.
She'd take it back. Oh, yes. She'd take it back. She certainly would.
Gee whiz. I'd love to hear more about that. But you didn't have much to say about that. That's shop talk.
She didn't talk about it too much, no.
I told you, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. She talked a little bit about the report that they were writing. She wrote part of it, and I told her I sure would like to see it when she gets through. She said she'd try to steal a copy. Consumer fraud. She said she'd get a few copies extra.
Yeah. Well, I would tell you, Debbie, you see, I've gone through those battles before. You see, all of the arts are very difficult to talk about. Painting, it's next to impossible. All they do is give you schools of art. Styles of art,
that's
things
not,
like that.
That's not true. I can talk about art with my godmother.
Well, that's unusual, but by and large, that's what it consists of. It's just putting little blocks together. And music is just, if anything, it's harder than the others, you see. They'll get on, like Faye, she gets on a sonata form, and she'll have you eating and sleeping that sonata form. Well, maybe that's the way to do it, but it's very difficult to put the arts into words.
Yes, and I think it's probably hardest with music.
Sure.
Because you have to be so trained in the language before you can understand it if you're not a trained musician. You know, for example, if you don't read music.
Yes. Well, I find that rather dangerous ground, and I try to skirt it. And nobody wants to get hung up on that. So there you go. But now you consume the stuff. That'll go a long way. Your what we'll call it springs, all those springs, I suppose, are losing out. I suppose. They used to have such beautiful ones, you know, and that's where people would go.
Well, Cola is still beautiful, but I guess it won't stay that way too long if it becomes a state park.
Yeah.
And this ball.
Oh, Lord, that's the end of everything. You see, that's the end of Cross Creek, that state park over there.
See, this is where Bonnie Harper took us when we were up there last year. And she had a lot to say about Ball, who was trying to keep it, you know. Mm-hmm. He was a big, you know, he made a lot of money, but still he was trying to keep it to where the boats would stay out.
Yeah, and...
And they were hoping that they could.
Well, it doesn't look like he's going to win in the court, so...
Oh, no. No, you can't. You can't win. It'll take another major environmental effort to do it, wouldn't it?
And you get the defenders busy.
What do they say about Cornwell?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, he's it's kind of hard for them to
yeah.
adopt him. What, in a word, what is it? Just because he sort of runs with the ball too much?
I just don't know, God.
That's the impression I got. It tired me to talk to him.
He.
I wanted to.
He's an ecologist.
Sure. Maybe it's so difficult. Hard on a person.
That could be.
You've got to be pretty steady to start with.
Yeah.
To take the blows.
Maybe. Pretty quick on your feet, quick changing too.
Yeah.
My mother talks about Margie Carr changing plans every day.
Yeah.
She says that she's a very highly imaginative person.
Oh, really?
Because every problem that comes in, they get called and ask the most incredible questions. Their worst problem is people write to them, children mostly, write to them and say, please tell me what is ecology. I would like pictures too. Love, Susie, in this big handwriting, you know. And my mother just grieves over these children. She wants to have them be interested in ecology, but she doesn't know how to answer. What is ecology? Please send me some pictures. Love, Susie. She doesn't know what to do. But that's a simplified case of the questions. But Margie Carr gets the questions from the legislators. What is ecology? Send us pictures.
Yeah.
Only they say it in three paragraphs and 10-letter words.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing.
Yeah. I could help her on that. I probably handle it written language better than she can.
Margie.
Uh-huh.
Well, none of the people that they have writing down there can write.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
for
not
sure.
Talking about the ability to write. I'm talking about framing it.
Mine just saying something clearly is something they should.
Say something clearly to the legislature.
Yeah.
I don't know, Debbie. You've seen more than I have.
I only met Mrs. Carr a couple of times.
So you don't know a thing that goes on around there?
Well, I see it. I went down and worked for my mother one morning, typed some things, and helped her rewrite a report of David Anthony's. About the studies done on the Rodman Reservoir.
Yeah.
Their efforts are primarily with the barge canal.
Yeah.
And just keeping up, my mother just keeps up with the press on the barge canal.
Yeah.
aunt's his nail, things like that. She tries to keep the organization running, so she says she's not creative, which I don't know whether that's true or not. But I think she's.
Greg, I'll just give Debbie that little piece of yours on Mr. Neal, and she just read it.
Mm-hmm.
It's in there. Do I have it? Still have it on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He found out that riding on Mr. Neal's trees over there that he has to leave out the politics, leave Mr. Neal's ignorant, and that he don't have a degree. He has to leave it all out. Just one little bit will contaminate the whole trip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Mr. Nealon realizes that. And I don't think, probably not that he's hard of hearing, you have to speak so loud to him. I think it's that talk. Now, how much he does of that to other people, I don't know. But I'm sure he does it to them, too. He don't just reserve that for me, does he?
One thing I found about being young and being associated with the age of college students is everyone comes along and tells you to go to college and get an education and all. And you're defenseless. If you're around, they won't say it. But if I go with Mr. Neal by myself, you know, it comes in a barrage.
How's that?
Is, well, have you gotten your degree? You're going to get your degree, you know. It's a rough world. You've got to make a living. You've got to have a thing to do. And you have to take it every time. There's not too much you can say.
Oh.
But it'll pass.
Well, now, you see me meet those things.
But they won't tell you to go to college.
Yes, but they'll tell me to go to hell and do a lot of things. And do it all the time, kick me on the shin. Probably worse than they ever would you.
Mm-hmm.
And I get them told first.
Mm-hmm.
If I think they're going to do it, if I think they won't know what Debbie's doing out here, I said they send them people out here, expect me to do something, and all, what do? Ride horses! You see, I can side track them. What they said me. Well, so you see, the whole thing is up there until next time. Well, I can get ahead of them the next time too. At least I won't get out on a they won't corner me.
But I can see how it's more difficult for you see the
yeah.
You're right. You got a hold of the subject.
Yes.
I don't know.
If
she's pretty firm every now and then.
That can be.
Yes, she can.
You know who's one step ahead and not getting caught like a sitting duck? Only I think she got caught. Candies. Remember we were talking about how it had this grandparental push that you were talking about Suzanne's parents? Well, Candy and Douglas are getting this really badly from both sides of the family, that why they've been married 2 years and why don't they have a baby yet? And so Candy, the last time she went home, she decided she'd get her mother good. And so she said, well, her mother was going on and on about, well, why don't you have a baby, Candy? When are you going to have a baby? And Candy said, well, tell your mother, we just can't afford to have a baby right now. But I'll tell you, if you're willing to support us for a year, we'll go on and have a baby right now. And her mother said, well, you know, I could probably manage that, Candy. I could probably send you a check every month. Don't tell that to anybody. Miss Mary Incarnate over here. That's classified.
Let me tell you.
You're not supposed to pass that one on.
Let me tell you, Sunday, I just got at 10:30, just at the magical time, I said to Faye, I got loose what I was doing. I wasn't doing much. I was trying to get straight. I worked a day or more. Saturday was one of the worst days I ever had. I was so tired I eat. And then everything come along would snag me, or I'd snag it, you see. It's a wonder I got through the day. Well, anyhow, I tried to do it Saturday. than I did it on Sunday, I tried to work out this what I call the Virgil affair, beginning on Thursday when you went over there until the end of it. Well, Sunday, we got a little more light on it. I must have got ahead of something. Anyhow, I said to Faye, it is just time. It is just time. We go over there and talk about those collards, and maybe we can get in the kitchen and make some biscuits. And we did. We did both. And furthermore, we had a visitor out there at the collard place. They were out there when we got there. So we came on in, and I said, she spoke pretty straight. Wasn't that the day she spoke pretty straight about Virgil?
Yeah.
No, it was the day before.
Yeah.
It was another day. Yes. But this day, I just brought it up. I said, why, Ms. Mary, Debbie tells me that Virgil said, Ms. Dargino said he was just so expert in all these things, and he told her that he had learned this billiards pool, he's an expert at that. That he had learned that from a professional. Oh, she says, I know that professional. She said he learned that like all these other tramps around here, just down here at this little entertainment center. They had a grocery store there, the Thomases did, and tried to make that go for several years, and it wouldn't go, so they turned it into an entertainment center and had pinballs and billiards and all like that. And she says, oh man, Thomas is a professional that taught him to play pool. I said, once you get a thing started, it'll just go on and on it.
Just keep going.
I think I said, well, maybe he learned from a professional when he was in the Army. Marvin said, oh, no, he didn't. He never had a pool cue stick in his hand in the Army. It wasn't where it was in it.
He was in Korea, you see. They didn't have any in Korea. They might have had them. Well,
oh my.
I think the musical comedy is hard to talk about. You can't get your teeth in. Maybe I'm just academic. And as for listening to it, I don't know. It's a little hard for me to listen to it now. I'd much rather hear the countryside. I don't know, that one little thing that Ms. Dodd, Shirley, she leaned over and she says, now, I want to tell you this. Something was coming. And she went into that cow that got caught, her chain, and that old implement that they left out there. You see, let the subject be what it may. The reporting is there. And as she talks, you see all sorts of relationships. In your mind, you see, and then you hear little additions to it, and it enables you to see them. Now, that's what happened to me Saturday. I was so tired, and I'd been out here all day and I waited for that damn Seminole truck, and then when I came, they had a couple of bulldozer drivers on it. And they had just barely left, and Dodd came to pick up that little calf I was going to sell him for $100. Calf is out there. And that was too much for me. I was just bringing up the cows. I had such an onerous, Faye had been down there with me, and I just couldn't get along with her or the cows, and I just put them back in the field. I said, let's go on back to the house. I came back up here and lay down and rested a few minutes, and she went off, and I was glad she did. And I went down there, and I picked out me a few cows and started up here. I said, all by myself. I thought I'd go out there and just sit down on the tree with them cows. And here come the Dodge rattling up in that pickup truck with Mr. Dodge driving, and there that grown son of his, who's not 16 yet, and been married but 17 years, you know. I don't give a damn if I haven't been married but 10. And then Miss Dodd. Now, I was dealing with Miss Dodd. She's the only one over there I want to deal with. And I like to deal with her. I rode with Mr. Dodd, and he drove when he took these other animals home. And I could just see that one little baby calf in there, all by himself, in the back end of that, and all them three adults sitting up there, scrooging away in the front, in the cab of that car, and they go over, that little calf would swish over on this side, then he'd swish over on this side, and then he'd swish up against the cab, and I wouldn't even speak to the bastard. I said, I've been waiting for you all day. I've got these cows now. It'll be an hour or two before I get through. And I went on with them cows. I just couldn't face it. Putting that nice little calf